This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. The legal teams have made their final pitches in the impeachment trial of U.S. President Donald Trump. U.S. senators vote later this week. AP correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
The president's lawyers argue the impeachment is aimed at overturning the last election and interfering in this November's, and it's not up to the Senate to pick the commander-in-chief.
Leave it to the voters to choose their president.
But lead House impeachment manager Adam Schiff mocked White House counsel Pat Cipollone's argument.
He's guilty as sin, but can't we just let the voters decide?
Schiff says no, because they know the president cheated to win one election and will do it again.
100%.
It takes a two-thirds vote to remove the president, meaning his acquittal is all but certain in the GOP-led Senate come Wednesday. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Hong Kong has reported its first death from coronavirus, while in China Monday the death toll rose to 361. Reuters' Michelle Hennessy reports the pandemic is having an impact on China's benchmark stock index.
China's stock market suffered its worst drop in nearly 5 years on Monday as the virus hit mainland reopened its exchanges for the first time since the Lunar New Year holiday. Fears over the new coronavirus saw investors selling the yuan and dumping commodities, with around $400 billion wiped from the Shanghai Composite Index. The benchmark closed nearly 8% lower, the biggest one-day drop since 2015. The ticker around the Shanghai Stock Exchange, which would have shown a plunge, was shut off on Monday. Investors are bracing for volatility as the spread of the new coronavirus weighs on the world's growth outlook.
That's Reuters' Michelle Hennessy. Over 17,000 people have fallen sick from coronavirus. You're listening to VOA News. Britain's justice minister says the government will introduce emergency legislation to prevent convicted terrorists from automatically being released early from prison. This comes a day after police shot dead a man they say stabbed two people in South London. The Islamic State is claiming responsibility for the attack. The latest attempt at an HIV vaccine has failed. Researchers say they've stopped giving the experimental shots in a major study. AP's Shelley Adler has more.
The study had enrolled more than 5,400 people since 2016 in South Africa, a country with one of the world's highest HIV rates. Last month, monitors checked how the study was going, and according to the U.S. National Institutes of Health, 129 HIV infections had occurred among the vaccine recipients, compared with 123 among those given a dummy shot. Two other large studies in several countries are underway, testing a different approach to a possible HIV vaccine. Shelley Adler, Washington.
A key accuser in the New York rape trial of movie producer Harvey Weinstein faced cross-examination on Monday. AP's Ed Donahue has that story.
The woman had testified Weinstein trapped her in a New York hotel room in March of 2013 and 8 months later at a Los Angeles hotel. Under cross-examination, Weinstein attorney Donna Rotuno accused her of being manipulative, that she liked the party, she liked the power. The woman testified she stayed in touch with the once powerful movie mogul to protect her acting career, to make him believe she wasn't a threat. She later admitted she was afraid of Weinstein's unpredictable anger. At times during cross-examination, the woman struggled to recall certain details, asking for a break, saying she was getting a little foggy. I'm Ed Donahue.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is demanding evidence from the Taliban that it will lower the violence level in Afghanistan before signing a deal that will lead to peace talks. A recording of the Broadway show Hamilton is coming to U.S. movie theaters. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta.
My name is Alexander Hamilton.
A version of Hamilton featuring creator Lin-Manuel Miranda and the original Broadway cast will hit North American movie theaters on October 15, 2021, according to the Walt Disney Company. The show was filmed in June of 2016 in New York. Show director Tommy Cale, who also directs the film version, says they are thrilled that fans and new audiences will get to experience what it was like on stage and in the audience. I'm Margie Zaraletta.
U.S. Democrats in the farm state of Iowa are holding caucuses tonight to begin picking a party nominee to face Republican President Donald Trump in next November's election, national election. 11 candidates are competing. The Iowa winner could get a boost in other state contests that will soon follow in the nominating process. I'm Marissa Melton. You're listening to VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawians welcome a court nullification of last year's election results.
We are right away celebrating because this is not just a decision for Doraza Tukwera. It is a decision that is going to transform Malawi forever.
Maurice Mutale is the spokesperson for the opposition Malawi Congress Party. We'll also have in-depth analysis on the impact of the court ruling. In Uganda, Bobi Wine's People Power Movement gets a statement of support from a senior opposition leader. At least 14 students were killed yesterday in a primary school stampede in Kenya. And Nigerians in the United States launch a petition drive to reverse President Donald Trump's travel ban.
If we have 100,000 signatures within the next 28 days, based on the procedure we adopted, the White House will have to review the policy.
Barrister Emmanuel Ogebe is the president of the Nigeria Law Group, and humanitarian conditions are deteriorating for millions of people in Mali. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The spokesperson for main opposition Malawi Congress Party says presidential candidate Dr. Lazarus Chakwera and the party feel vindicated following yesterday's constitutional court ruling nullifying the results of last year's presidential election. Maurice Mutale says the judgment clearly shows that the court has accepted the party's evidence that the presidential poll was fraught with irregularities and rigging. The ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, has the right to appeal the decision to the Supreme Court. The Constitutional Court also called for new balloting to take place within 150 days.
We are right away celebrating, and we believe that this is what Malawians were expecting, and it has come according to Malawians' expectations, because this is not just a decision for Doraza Tukwera. It is a decision that is going to transform Malawi forever.
What does this ruling mean to the people of Malawi?
This ruling is unprecedented. It is unhistoric. It is going to restore the hope that was lost in the hearts of Malawians. This is a decision or a ruling that is going to change the course of Malawi forever, politically, economically, and socially. Because in any future election, Malawi will never be the same, because such nonsense as we have witnessed from the past elections will never happen again. So this is a remedy for all the ills, not only in terms of elections, but in terms of our economy and our social services.
The judges said elections should be held within 150 days. Will your party get ready before the next round of elections?
Yes. In fact, according to Malawi Congress Party, we already won the elections, only that the elections were rigged. So we have no worry at all. We only want to take a step further, gear up our efforts, and make sure that the next battle we emerge triumphant. So yes, we're going to be ready, very ready. We're going to be working with our other partners, our allies, and we'll get there. And this to us is like people have already voted the Malawi Congress Party leader into office already, because definitely he, we believe, won the elections. And this is only going to be for the sake of it and to ensure that the one who won the last elections is put into office.
What are you telling your supporters in terms of over-celebrating? Because some people are saying that rubbing it in the eyes of supporters of the ruling DPP party could create some form of tension and possible violence.
While we know that nobody can teach somebody how to celebrate, but Dr. Lazarus Chakwera has always said, let us do everything according to the principles upon which Malawi Congress Party is built. And we are a disciplined party. We have always championed peace. And this time around, we are championing the same through our president. We're going to celebrate peacefully. And for your information, Malawi is going to go back into normal business by tomorrow, because everybody in Malawi is happy, because this is what they were expecting.
Maurice Mutale is the spokesperson for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. Malawi Governance Committee Makumbo Mutale says the court ruling means former Vice President Saulos Chilima of the United Transformation Movement, UTM Party, will go back to becoming vice president again until the next election in 150 days.
According to the court's ruling, what it has done, it has nullified the elections. So what it means is that whatever decision that was there before the May election, the status quo in terms of who was the president and the vice president automatically becomes the president and the vice president, in as far as what our constitution says, that there shall never be a vacuum in the office of the president and vice president. So what it means is the current vice president, who was Mr. Everton Chimulile, automatically ceases to be the vice president. But then I think it also means that in terms of their working relationship, we don't really see them working together. I think this is the same situation that we had prior to the election, that each one of them was working according to his own schedule.
As you know, the Malawi Electoral Commission was the subject of the minute protest where protesters were calling for the commission chair, Justice Jean Ansah, to step down. What do you see as the future of the Malawi Electoral Commission?
Yes, actually, the Malawi Electoral Commission is the one that has been most affected by the ruling. Actually, the court has found it in the wrong in as far as fulfilling its mandate. So the court has actually established that the Malawi Electoral Commission did not do according to what the Constitution actually indicated. And then it has further indicated that despite the fact that it proceeded to declare Mutharika as the winner, there were still massive irregularities that were there. And the court has further indicated that Mutharika was not duly elected as the president on 21st May 2019 and has put the blame actually on the Malawi Electoral Commission actually for proceeding with that. So in terms of the integrity of Malawi Electoral Commission, currently I would say it has really been heavily damaged. And the court proceeded to say that within the next 150 days, there has to be a fresh election where we have to have a new government. And it has entrusted the Malawi Parliament to set a new date and also an enabling legislation for the fresh elections.
I'm sure a lot of African countries are watching what happened in Malawi. Is there a lesson here from the Malawi experience that you think other countries in Africa should be paying attention to?
Most definitely. I think in Malawi, this has been a long-term issue around who appoints the electoral commissioners. I think in Malawi, you find that it's basically the president who has those powers to appoint an electoral commission in consultation with some political parties. But I think this has really been an issue that many civil society groups and other key stakeholders have been pushing for, to say we need to make reforms around the issue of appointment of the commissioners that are in the electoral commission.
Makumbo Mutale is a Malawi governance commentator. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. The Opposition People Power Movement of Uganda says it welcomes a statement of support by a senior opposition leader for Member of Parliament Robert Chakulayi, also known as Bobby Wine. Wine has announced he will challenge President Yoweri Museveni in next year's presidential election. Mugisha Muntu, leader of the Alliance for National Transformation, said that he could support Wine in next year's presidential poll. Joel Senyonyi is a spokesperson for the People Power Movement, says the group welcomes Montu's endorsement.
It's a vote of confidence on our part that he sees that our candidate has got what it takes to become president of our country. And so we take it in humility and we keep engaging with all the other forces that are interested in change to see how we can come together in every sense. And it's not just about the presidency. It's about these other positions too. We want to come together for parliamentary seats, for local council seats and all these others.
Well, some people have said that since all the opposition parties have one major objective, which is to wrestle power from President Yoweri Museveni, why not begin working hard towards coming up with a united front, a single presidential candidate, or a commonly shared representatives across the country in terms of the parliamentary seat, so you have a better chance of your objective of dislodging the ruling National Resistance Movement? What do you say to this?
The process has been on for quite a bit of time. It still is on. We continue to engage our colleagues to see that we can have the possibility of fronting joint candidates at all levels. And what we are in agreement about, which is an exciting thing, is that all the forces of change recognize that we are better when we are united. We are stronger when we are united. So for us, that's an exciting thing, that we are in agreement on that. And so once we are in agreement on that, Then we begin to work out the modalities. How do we do this? How do we get to field joint candidates at all positions, right from the president coming down to parliament, local councils, and all the others?
We also understand that police have arrested five leaders of the opposition FDC who were allegedly holding illegal political activities in Kasangati, Wakiso district. This is a similar situation to yours when you were also arrested along some of your colleagues and presidential candidate for holding an illegal meeting or consultation.
It's become apparent that President Museveni does not want opposition activities to happen. Meantime, he goes around the country. He will walk, sit in the middle of the road, block traffic as he's talking to people, dishing out money in broad daylight and literally campaigning using taxpayers' money. But as he does that, he does not want the rest of us who are challenging him to go out there and interact with Ugandans. That's unfortunately how dictatorships operate.
Joel Senyonyi is the spokesperson for the People Power Movement of Uganda. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 4th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Nigerians in the United States have launched a petition drive for President Donald Trump to reconsider his travel ban against Nigeria. Barrister Emmanuel Ogebe, president of the Nigeria Law Group, says if the petition can get 100,000 signatures within the next 28 days, President Trump would have to review the policy. Nigeria, Eritrea, Tanzania, and Sudan are the latest African countries added to President Trump's travel ban. The Trump administration says it is concerned about terrorist threats from Nigeria. Ogebe described the ban as an unguided demagoguery, which he says seems to target only people of African descent. He says the United States cannot call Nigeria a strategic partner in Africa while at the same time imposing a unilateral travel ban.
There are three ways to address this visa ban. One is through the executive, one is through the legislature, and one is through the judiciary. And we decided to take the first approach of directly asking the executive to review the policy. So if we have 100,000 signatures within the next 28 days, based on the procedure we adopted, the White House will have to review the policy.
Whose stipulation is the, 100,000 petitions? Is that the White House stipulation or what? Where did that come from?
Yes, the White House requires 100,000 signatures before they will review the policy. This is a standard practice. I think it was introduced during the tenure of, I believe it was President Obama, I'm not sure. Clearly, Nigeria does not fall into the category of the Muslim ban, which President Trump had said he was targeting even during his campaigns. And this is the danger with unguided demagoguery. First, they come for one group, and then when they succeed, they come for another group. This current targeting of the visa ban seems overwhelmingly aimed at colored people or people of African descent. So they have basically found an excuse to enact demographic reengineering of the U.S. by trying to reduce certain segments of the population.
As you know, 2020 is election year in the United States. There are those who have argued that the travel ban plays well, say, politically for President Trump. So do you think you're confident that once you reach the 100,000 signatures of the petition, that he will have to consider your appeal?
Well, we can but hope. If anyone knows anything about President Trump, the fact is that he's highly unpredictable, he's highly inconsistent. He doesn't operate according to norms and regulations, as the current impeachment trial shows. So are we certain that he will respond? We do not know for sure that he will respond appropriately, but we do know that this is the procedure. And if we fulfill the procedure, it is up to him whether he's going to breach the procedure or not.
The annual U.S.-Nigeria Bi-National Commission is currently meeting here in Washington, D.C. Do you think that with the Nigerian delegation here, I think headed by the foreign minister, do you think they will raise this issue of the travel ban with President Trump?
Well, I hope so. But again, you know, apparently it looks like the U.S. is saying that it was failures of the Nigerian government that resulted in this happening the way it has now, in the ban occurring in the first place.
Failure to fight terrorism.
I find the excuses given by the U.S. as wishy-washy. They are claiming that there was a lack of information sharing. So it's debatable what the true reasons are and what the publicly stated reasons are, whether they're genuine or not. But I want to make clear that if we had a sensible leadership in Nigeria now, going into the BNC, they would say three things to the U.S. government. One is that we want to set up a working group specifically on this issue so that this issue is resolved. You cannot call us a strategic partner in Africa, and then you take an action like this, basically unilaterally. Let's address this here and now while we're here. The second thing that Nigeria could do would be to say to the U.S., why are you barring our citizens from migrating to the U.S., but you still allow 11,000 of our students to come to the U.S., paying $500 million in school fees to the U.S.? So you are taking advantage of us and not giving us anything in return.
It's so nice to talk with you. Keep us posted on the progress of your petition.
Thank you very much, James.
Barrister Emmanuel Ogebe is the president of the Nigeria Law Group. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. At least 14 primary school students have died and more than 30 seriously injured following a stampede at the school. The incident happened Monday evening as the students were preparing to dismiss for home. It is still not clear what caused the stampede. But as Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the students reportedly fell on each other as they tried to force their way on the staircase of the five-story building.
It was a sad Monday evening at Kakamega Primary School and Kakamega Referral Hospital when parents, teachers and pupils were helplessly crying for help, leaders from the area streaming in at the hospital. To confirm the status of the children, have asked the members of the public to be calm as they ascertain the cause of the deaths. Former head teacher of Kakamega Primary School, David Igunza, speaking at the hospital, said that it is difficult to give details of what might have happened that led to the death of the children.
It is shocking. I cannot give an explanation because I've just come here only to find dead bodies. And therefore, I'm calling on members of the public to be cool so that we get exactly what has happened, because we cannot give an explanation as per now.
Members of Parliament who were at the hospital yesterday evening said that further investigation should be carried out to get to the root cause of the tragedy. Mumias East Member of Parliament Benjamin Washiali said some pupils are in a stable condition and that few who are in critical condition are being attended to, and that if need be, they will be referred for further treatment.
I've just talked to the doctors. We have two small kids in the ICU. One is not doing very well. Therefore, for now, we will just let it at that so that we find out the facts, because we don't want to start blaming anyone here. First of all, make sure that the children are safe. Then that's when we can now start finding out the facts as they were. For now, I just want to call upon everybody who can come in and assist, especially blood. We don't have enough blood in this hospital. People can come in to donate some blood. What we need to do at this point first is to save the children.
The doctors at the referral hospital were on strike and were recalled back on duty to attend to the injured pupils. On the other hand, Lurambi Member of Parliament Titus Mohwana said that government will offer support to the school and parents.
Thankful to the doctors, number one, because they were on strike, but they're here and they're doing their best. We've been in the ICU, in the wards, in the casualty, and we've seen they're doing a good job. They have come back, and those who are not here, they're here. We can't blame. We cannot say anything right now because there is investigations going on from the Minister of Education. We are very ready to support, to give anything that is needed.
Reports indicate that the pupils were running out of the class to go home after classes when the tragedy occurred, and that some fell from the third floor of the building. Most of them sustained chest injuries. Kakamega Primary School has a population of more than 3,000 pupils. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
United Nations agencies say humanitarian conditions for millions of people in Mali are deteriorating as armed groups and extremists wreak havoc and destroy the livelihoods of civilians. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations reports around 4.3 million Malians need humanitarian aid this year, including more than 1 million who are suffering serious food shortages. Uta Kolis, the head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Mali, calls their situation very disconcerting. She says people are unprotected. They live in a state of chronic insecurity and abuse, which paralyzes their ability to provide the most basic necessities for themselves and their families.
So people are unable to go to their fields because of the insecurity. Malnutrition is obviously coupled with the food insecurity and remains of high concern. We have a national prevalence of global acute malnutrition at about 9.4%, which is a serious situation according to WHO.
Mali has experienced chronic instability since jihadist groups briefly seized control of the north in 2012. Mali has experienced chronic instability since jihadist groups briefly seized control of the north in 2012. The groups and criminal networks remain active in Mali and neighboring countries despite the presence of French and African counterterrorism forces. Kohli says the international community spends far more money on beefing up military intervention in Mali than on helping people suffering from hunger, lack of food, water, health, education, and other basic relief. She says last year, the UN received only half of its $324 million appeal. At the same time, she says, the UN Blue Helmets, different national forces, and the Malian army received a total of $3 billion. Although these forces are in Mali to protect the population, she tells VOA they have done little to bolster security in the country.
And I personally think that asymmetric terrorist attacks in the past, historically, have very seldom been won with a military intervention only. You have to have political solutions and you have to follow up at that level.
Kohli says she cannot recall any country where hundreds of thousands of soldiers have been deployed has met with success in engaging in a war on terror. What is needed, she says, is a political solution and more financing for humanitarians who can help lift people up out of their despair. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you a summary of Africa news, the spokesperson for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party says presidential candidate Dr. Lazarus Chakwera and the party feel vindicated following yesterday's constitutional court ruling nullifying the results of last year's presidential election. Maurice Mutale says the judgment clearly shows that the court has accepted the party's evidence that the presidential poll was fraught with irregularities and rigging. Nigerians in the United States have launched a petition drive to President Donald Trump to reconsider his travel ban against Nigeria. Barrister Emmanuel Ogabe, president of the Nigeria Law Group, says if the petition can get 100,000 signatures within the next 28 days, President Trump would have to review the policy. Nigeria, Eritrea, Tanzania, and Sudan are the latest African countries added to President Trump's travel ban. The Trump administration says it is concerned about terrorist threats from Nigeria. Ogabe described the ban as an unguided demagoguery, which he says seems to target only people of African descent. And that's it for this Tuesday, February 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the Great Lakes region has a turbulent history marked by conflict at the expense of its citizens. Human rights in the Great Lakes region on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Rock and roll, America's finest export. Our culture and music of today are permanently indebted to the pioneers who trailblazed this musical tradition. Listen to Border Crossings on February 6th to hear rock's greatest musicians like Jerry Lee Lewis, Buddy Holly, and Elvis Presley, only on The Voice of America.